Well, hello there. Welcome back. I'm going to be going through these signs right now and symbols. And what I did was I prepared a web page because it was just getting too complicated to try to identify all these things. And boy, is it something else. So here's what I suggest you do. I'm going to walk you through my website with some of my general comments, but I won't be like reading every word there. There's likely a lot of orphans there. What? She's been taking orphans? No, there's probably orphan copy, meaning that I copied and pasted things and I did not go through and read all the copy yet. So the site is in severe need of a design and editing. Am I going to get to it? Maybe, maybe not. But I've got everything we need to look for. So go to psychopathinyourlife.com and then click on the tab that says, let me see what the tab says. It says, the Society of Jesus, Jesuits, military organization, not a religious order. So if you click open that tab, while you're doing that, let me see here. It opens with a picture of Francis, Pope Francis, who took the name from Francis de Assisi. So I have dug up everything I could possibly dig up. I love looking at pictures, so it was a lot of fun putting this together. So, besides the editing and design work, it's pretty much complete. So, what I've done is I have captured things like the complete oath of the Jesuits. I've also captured their very chilling oath that says, I furthermore promise and declare that I will, when opportunity present, make and wage relentless war, secretly or openly, against all heretics, Protestants, and liberals, as I am directed to do. Yes, that Jesuit oath that they take to get to that level. Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. We came in like lambs and will rule like wolves. We shall be expelled like dogs and return like eagles. So, who are the Jesuits? Well, they started in Spain, Saint Ignatius Loyola. Remember the last couple of shows, I kept thinking, what's up with Spain? Well, hiding right here in the open is Spain. The Jesuits came from Spain. Ignatius Loyola was the Spanish soldier and mystic and founded the Society of Jesus in 1534 as an order in service to the Pope, not to compete with. The Jesuits, as a society know, are renowned as an order of educators, stressing critical thinking, but they have a more ambivalent, sometimes strained relationship with certain popes. Jesuit universities, religious houses, and individual priests issued words of praise and congratulation to Pope Francis, kind of like bringing one of their own back home, right? Francis, the early reports began raising questions about his role as a Jesuit superior in dealing with the military junta during the 1970s Dirty War, a struggle in which 30,000 people, including more than 100 priests, were killed by the violence, but the church as a whole was largely silent. Kind of like how they were silent over the Jew deal, right? So I open up with the signs. What I was getting them confused is this: they have the Knights Templar, okay? And the Knights Templar are no longer around. The Knights Templar have a logo which looks very close to the Knights of Malta. It's the Knights of Malta that we're looking for, okay? And so as you start to scroll down here, what do we see? Well, we see the Malta cross looks very much like the cross that's called the Iron Cross. You'll see the Nazis of them all wearing that Iron Cross. So I gathered a lot of symbols of what the Iron Cross actually looked like. So the Iron Cross is often confused with the Maltese cross. The shape of each cross and the Iron Cross retains the actual shape too. So they're both look like the Iron Cross, But the only difference is the Maltese cross has a deep V cut into each arm of the cross, forming the eight-pointed cross of the Knights of Malta. And the Knights of Malta were how I got suspicious years ago because I saw pictures of Mandela hanging out wearing a Knights of Malta robe. And I thought, well, not a good look. Obviously, Mandela, quite compromised, right? One of them. So then I found another Nazi memorabilia, and it looked exactly like the Malta logo with those indented things on the thing, and it has the Nazi symbols in the center. I think what happened was they just changed the logo, just made some points in it, right? Not that hard to do. Not that hard to do. And if you look on the clothes that the Pope is wearing, they wear a cross that looks just like the Iron Cross. It's embroidered all over their clothes. And I dug up all the different crosses that I could find. Many people have a lot of crosses, but it's all in the details. Because if this guy that I had the picture of with the Nazi cross and the Malta cross, well, why would he have both crosses in one picture? Because they're part of the same group, right? So they have papal crosses, they have Serbian crosses, they have the Maltese cross. The Maltese is particularly interesting. Remember, they had that movie, The Maltese Falcon. Here is a detail that I dug up that I found very, very fascinating. Pope Francis brings back the bent cross. Crozier, what in the heck is a bent cross? It was bound to happen. Jorge Bergoglio, whom the world calls Pope Francis, has reintroduced the repulsive bent cross, Crozier, sometimes referred to as the broken cross, after Benedict had, for the most part, abandoned it. So this cross, it's a cross. It looks just like Jesus hanging on the cross, like the crucifix, but it shows the bent cross, ferula, or staff, which is a hideous rendition of a crucifix, shows our Lord's legs immodestly spread apart and shows the crossbars bent rather than straight. So I guess Christians feel like, why did he bring back this bent cross? Well, maybe because he's the end times person, right? Maybe he's that person, the Antichrist everybody's talking about. Don't know. But the Rothschilds have been part of the Jesuits order since way before 1776. Maltese cross indicates membership and alliance to the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, a Masonic order created in 1099 AD by direct descendants of Roman emperors, of which the Jesuit order is a brand. And I have pictures of the Rothschilds wearing the Malta logo. They also show logos here. I went through, well, my background's in marketing, so I looked at all the logos, and you'll be interested to find out that the United Nations logo is very much like the Roman Empire logo. I've been saying for years, this is nothing but a cut and paste operation. Now, did it go back thousands of years? With this particular group, no way. There is no way this group has been in charge for more than a couple hundred years. Not possible. Look at them. They're falling to pieces. So, how these Jesuits get started? We're always looking at the beginning, right? And here again, there was a movie about these Borgia people, and I kept running across their pictures. Francis Borgia, Borgia, was commissioned by Alejandro Farnese to create the Jesuit order, the military order of the Vatican. Ignacio of Loyola was Borgia's puppet. Borgia was the great grandson of King Ferdinand II of Aragon. So Borgia is the name you were looking for, right? Borgia started the Jesuits, okay? What do we know about the Borgia? You could write 100 books about these Borgias. But it's always interesting to find out how they got started, right? Well, these Borgias are quite interesting people. They did a movie about them. Saint Francis Borgia, 1510 to 1570 true, was a true Renaissance man who lived two lives in one, first as a married layman, then as a Jesuit priest, who is often described as the second founder of the order. Francis was from the noble family of the Borgias, noble being used here in the strict sense, for they are renowned for their moral failings. Saint Ignatius of Loyola was a Spanish priest and theologian who founded the Jesuit order in 1534 and was one of the most influential figures in the Counter-Reformation. So we have two people. We have Ignatius Loyola, Spanish priest, and we have Francis Borgia. Known for its missionary education and charitable works, the Jesuit order was a leading force in the modernization of the Roman Catholic Church. Who are these Borgias? The House of Borgia, family of great renown, wealth, and corruption. The House of Borgia was a noble family that rose to prominence during the 15th and 16th century. Originally from Spain, the family established itself in Italy, where they played an important role in the country's affairs. On the one hand, they were great patrons of the arts and contributed substantially to the Italian Renaissance. On the other hand, the family was notorious for the innumerable crimes they committed. In fact, it is often the latter that overshadows the former. The House of Borgia had many notable members, the four best known of whom are Alfonso de Borgia, who became Pope Calixtus III, his nephew Rodrigo de Borgia, who became Pope Alexander VI, Cesare Borgia and Liutgrid Borgia, both of whom were Pope Alexander's children. The House of Borgia was an Italian-Spanish noble family that rose to prominence during the Renaissance. The Borgia originated in the town of Borgia in Aragon, Spain, and the family was allegedly descendants from the Marranos. The Marranos we talked about in the past. They are the Jewish converts to Christianity, Marranos, Marranos, though this claim was mostly made by its anti-Semitic rivals in Italy, so they're not even claiming that to be true. The Jesuit order is an almost 500-year covert operation, demanding secret oaths and complete obedience to each direct superior, which is ultimately the superior general. Often nicknamed as the Black Pope, since he dresses in black and stands in the shadow of the White Pope. The insignia of the Society of Jesus or the Jesuits supposedly formed in 1534. Their insignia shows the black sun, which is what they in fact worship. The Society of Jesus was originally used by the Vatican to counter the various Reformation movements in Europe, to which the Vatican lost much of its religious and political power. Absolute temporal ruling power has always been the Vatican institution's primary objective. The Jesuit order is since 1814 in complete control of the obscenely wealthy Vatican institution and its Catholic clergy hierarchy, and presently also controls other organizations under the Military Order of Malta, such as the United Nations, NATO, hello, Virginia, European Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, various central banks, big corporations, secret services, numerous societies and cults such as the Freemasons, the Brotherhood, and Opus Dei. So, the Rothschilds, I talked about this in the past, Rothschild, the name Rothschild means red shield. That's why we have that color red all over the place. And that means the Red Shield is the high ranking members of the Knights of Malta. The Rothschilds had been part of the Jesuit order way before 1776. Maltese cross indicates membership and allegiance to the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, a Masonic order created in 1099 AD by direct descendants of Roman emperors, of which the Jesuit order is a brand. So, I have a lot of pictures to look at this, the Vatican Jesuit Crusades, war, genocide, depopulations, political subversions, economic slavery, poor quality nutrition, healthcare and housing, government propaganda via education, media, science, and religion, suppression of sovereignty, consciousness, and spirituality. Yeah, with the spirituality and consciousness, they're suppressing that by two things that you can fix right today. What are those two things, you ask? The sun. Get out in the sun, or figure out a way to get sunlight. The other thing is, besides the sun, I put you on hold for a minute to sit here and think. I don't remember. There's two things. Radiation is really tough business. Okay, so this is what the Jesuits are all up to, right? War, genocide, depopulation. And that's why on social media, they just throw around all these words, right? But nobody ever really explains it. The Vatican network operates Jesuit network mainly out of the following cities: Vatican City, Rome, Italy. Religious centers, sovereign state since 1929. City of London, United Kingdom, economic center, sovereign state since 1649, owned by the City of London Corporation. District of Columbia, which includes Washington, D.C., United States, military center, is what that includes. So the three access points I've been talking about for a very long time. Sited on the banks of the Tiburon River on a hill sits the Vatican City. It is a place that has one of the richest histories in the world. Okay, so the District of Columbia Act of 1871 turned D.C. into a municipal corporation. Congress has the supreme authority over the city and the federal district and its own special constitution amended since 1961. Furthermore, the District of Columbia is judicially governed by the Lex, L-E-X, Fori, as opposed to Lex Causae. There is an increasingly common belief that this act has overturned the United States Constitution. And yes, I've talked about this. What they did was they did a word trick. Under the name United States of America, they just changed the capitalization words around. They all agreed to it, and then we were sunk. The Jesuit bishop, John Carroll, was probably the richest man in America in the late 1700s. Carroll allowed funding to construct D.C., which is named Rome on the Potomac. The owner of the land used to be Francis Pope, and his priest was Jesuit Andrew White. Washington, D.C.'s original name was Rome, Maryland, and a branch of the Potomac River was called Tiber Creek, which was named after the Tiber River in Rome. Like Rome, Washington, D.C. has seven hills whose names are Capitol Hill, Meridian Hill, Flora Hill, Forest Hills, Hillbrook, Hillcrest, and Knox Hill. Other elements in this city: Jesuit Georgetown University, the Masonic Street Layout and Monuments, and the World Conference of Masonic Grand Lodges. So yeah, there's maps here. You can take a look. These people are such freaks for symbols that when they laid out these buildings, they laid them out as symbols. And then you'll hear all those people talking about Oh, you know, those people that talk about the mud flaps and all that kind of stuff. Well, don't get me started on all that. But they basically don't know what in the heck they're talking about. Okay, so let's talk about Obelisk. The Jesuit order was originally founded to fight for Christianity, but over time, as the Templars acquired immense power, adopted heretical teachings, and established a capitalist system based on material gain, their order fell afoul of the church. So they're originally to fight for Christianity, right? Despite their fearsome, battle-hardened reputation, the Knights Templar were learned men dedicated to protecting travelers and pilgrims of all religions, not just Christians. They were great statesmen, politically adept, economic traders, and they were apparently allied with the great sailor fraternity that had created a worldwide trading empire in Phoenician times. Despite a great deal of negative propaganda against the Templars at the time of their suppression, they are still known today as the preservers of knowledge and sacred objects. While the origins of the Knights Templar are said to go back to the building of King Solomon's Temple by Phoenician masons from Tyre, or even the Great Pyramid in Atlantis, we trace their modern history from the Crusades period of the Middle Ages. And I have pictures of all of these phallic symbols, also known as that big phallic symbol. And this one got me. I think I talked about this in the last show. I was looking up Baphomet, right? Baphomet is that figure they all worship. Baphomet has the goat head and all that stuff. Well, just out of the top of my head, I thought, gee, I wonder if Baphomet means baptized, and bingo, I got it, right? They have this whole deal about baptizing people, right? Baptizing, forgiving sins, right? Those are pretty good ways to control a bunch of people, right? Make them tell you everything. So, yeah, this baptism thing. Yeah, so what are you doing when you baptize a child? Well, I think what you're doing is handing it over to evil, is what I think what you're doing. But does that, I don't know, but that is what the symbolism says. He who does not receive baptism has no salvation. Except only martyrs who receive the kingdom of heaven, even without water, Saint Cyril of Jerusalem. For one who is not baptized by water and the Spirit cannot enter life, just as those who do not eat the flesh of the Son of Man and do not drink his blood cannot have life in themselves. And this is interesting, right? They're talking about baptizing, and don't they baptize them in a shallow pool of water? They have that little baptism thing sitting there, not much water in it. All these people are getting killed in shallow pools of water, right? You got to question this stuff, right? I think this is so cannibalistic, personally, right? You got that bloody Christ on that cross, and then you got this baptism stuff. For one who is not baptized by water and the Spirit cannot enter life, just as those who do not eat the flesh of the Son of Man and do not drink his blood cannot have life in themselves. I think this has to do with what they're doing on those rituals. Now, do I know this for a fact? Well, of course not. Nobody invited me, right? I happen to know a lot of people from when I work in Silicon Valley who are now married to transgenders who I suspect are into all this stuff, but everybody is ghosting me. I mean, come on, I wouldn't take somebody's name and say it on air, okay? There's no reason why people are ghosting me except for they're probably afraid I might say something, but I never would. I was your friend once, I would stay your friend to the end. So yeah, I can't get anybody to talk to me. I of all people would really want to hear. What happened to these people? What's your relationship like with your parents after they do this to you? I got a lot of questions. Anyway, so derived from the Greek baphe, BAPHE, and baphe means I dip, immersion, wisdom, skill, or craft. Thus, Baphomet means baptism, or initiation into wisdom. Yeah, they have those big, what do they call them when they have baptisms in the church? Oh, I don't know. Everybody gets all dressed up in white gowns and stuff. The kids, the babies wear the white gowns. Yeah, I would think that baptism, not a good thing to probably do. Okay, so also, there's this thinking possibly that Cain, you know, the Cain that turned everybody in or something, Cain was the deity before Baphomet. So did Baphomet come from Cain? Don't know. The modern Baphomet icon is commonly associated with imagery of a goat-headed diabolically idol allegedly worshipped by the Knights Templar during the 13th and 14th century. In reality, the connection between Baphomet and the primordial goat-headed god did not emerge until the 1850s. Well, why is that? Because the 1850s was around the time they took over? Baptism is recognized as one of the earliest and most prevalent Christian rites. See, rites, rituals. Although the idea did not originate with Christianity, it had been practiced by nearly all major Christian denominations throughout. But remember, they got this information from their people, right? Their history. So I'm reading it like it's fact, but I'm not agreeing that it's fact, okay? So there was supposedly this thing, and a king of France ordered the arrest of the Knights Templars in France. So the Knights Templar had become one of the most powerful military orders in Europe. During a war with the English, King Philip became heavily indebted to the Templars financially. King Philip desired to erase his debt, but also feared that the Templars could pose a military threat if he did not pay. Instead, he had hundreds of Knight Templars suddenly arrested and accused of heresy. Being arrested as a heretic was particularly unpleasant in medieval France due to Inquisition-style torture techniques. The punishment would continue until the prisoner confessed. This is what happened, supposedly. King Philip accused the Knights Templars of spitting and urinating on the cross, engaging in homosexuality, and worshiping Baphomet as an idol. Baphomet, presumably a reference to Muhammad, was allegedly incorporated into the Templar practice during their time mingling with Islamic culture in the Middle East. Basically, King Philip was accusing the Knights Templar of having become Muslims. Similar charges were leveled against other political opponents of King Philip the fourth, and also presumed to be fabricated. The most famous depiction of Baphomet is found in Levi's book, a 1987 book that became a standard reference for modern occultism. What does this creature represent? What is the meaning of the symbols around it? Why is it so important in occultism? There are several theories concerning the origins of the name Baphomet. The most claim that it is an old French corruption of the name Mohammed, which was Latinized to Mahomet, the prophet of Islam. During the Crusades, the Knights Templars stayed for during extended periods in Middle Eastern countries where they became acquainted with the teachings of Arabian mysticism. This contact with Eastern civilizations allowed them to bring back to Europe the basis of what would have become Western occultism, including Gnosticism, alchemy, Kabbalah, and Hermetism. The Templars' affinity with the Muslims led the church to accuse them of worshiping of an idol named Baphomet. So there are some plausible links between Baphomet and Mahomet. However, there are only theories. Levi, the French occultist who drew the famous depiction of Baphomet, argued that the name had been derived from Kabbalist coding, The name of the Templar Baphomet, which should be spelt Kabbalistically backwards, is composed of three abbreviations. So, possible origins of the figure. This is interesting because in Jungian theory, Baphomet is a continuation of the horned god archetype, as the concept of a deity bearing horns is universally present in individual psyches. To Cernunnos, Pan, Hathor, and the devil, as depicted by Christianity, and Baphomet have a common origin. Some of their attributes are strikingly familiar. Pan, I've talked about extensively, which was a prominent deity in Greece. The nature god was often depicted with horns on its head and the lower body of a goat. Pan is a phallic deity. His animalistic features are an embodiment of the carnal and procreative impulses of men. So that is where we get all these goats from, right? And there is a lot of copy here. And also, this is also interesting. Remember, they're moving towards the no sex thing, right? Androgynous, right? Baphomet himself is an androgynous character, as it is bearing the characteristics of both sexes, female breasts, and a rod representing the erect phallus. The concept of androgyneity is of great importance in occult philosophy, as it represents the highest level of initiation in the quest of becoming one with God. So yeah, Baphomet, pretty darn important, right? And I also have, I believe, and I've said this quite often, I believe this is a complete cut and paste operation. I think they probably wrote the script starting in the 1800s from when it probably really started, right? Give or take some years. And then they just moved backwards, right? And then they started writing in the famines and all the horrible things they were going to do to us. They wrote that into the Bible. So then when they start creating famine, hey, look, the Bible's always talked about famines. Well, yeah, because they wrote it, right? So they have these, the interesting thing, because the church is part of the snake business, right? They have the caduceus, which is that rod, okay? And they're saying the rod that Baphomet has is really his penis, okay? So this caduceus was also called Aaron's rod. And they also had one in Sanskrit and one at Hermes. So they have cut and paste this caduceus and those two snakes, because there's two logos here. One on that rod has one snake, and the other on the rod has two snakes and some wings. Well, the one with the one snake is where you'll typically see it at pharmacies and stuff. Pharmacies use the one snake, but people have gotten them so confused but that's how it's supposed to go. So Baphomet's phallus is actually Hermes Caduceus, a rod intertwined with two serpents. This ancient symbol is having been represented Hermetism for centuries. The Caduceus esoterically represents the activation of chakras from the base of the spine to the pineal gland using serpentine power. Hence, the serpents, or astral light. So, there's a whole history here of this Baphomet part, and how they got in the Catholic Church. Because remember, Satan and the myth of Satan, and why the myth was first propagated. The Sumerians turned into the Babylonians, who turned into the Egyptians, who turned into the Roman Empire, who turned into the Roman Catholic Church. So we start off with these darker skinned people, the Sumerians, right? They turned into the Babylonians, who turned into the Egyptians, who turned into the Roman Empire. So that's basically the path to take, right? They are all fascists. All fascist means is authoritarian. It is the corporate authoritarianism ruling the world. On top of that pyramid is the Rothschild banking cartel and the Roman Catholic Church, so they're hand in glove. There's, like I said, there's a lot of history here. Did I copy it all accurately? Yes, I copied what I found, but I may have left some things off, okay? So then I was looking more at these wings. Baphomet has black wings, although these are feathered wings, like angels, rather than the bat wings typically associated with the devil or demons. Because, yeah, I was really curious. I was looking through all these old religious pictures. I must have spent a few days just looking at pictures. I was in heaven. I was sitting there looking at pictures, and I thought, hey, why does this early demon have bat wings? And all this stuff about bats, bat vaccines and stuff, right? So Baphomet has black wings. And rather than the bat wings typically associated with the devil or demons, an upright caduceus, which is Hermes' magic wand entwined by a pair of snakes, is placed phallically between Baphomet's legs, although it also obscures the figure's genitalia. Never knew that. Never knew that that was in between their legs. That's why it's always good. Just keep on looking, right? I'm going to scan past this copy because, well, I need to keep moving and get back to resting. So there's just a lot to read here. But if you read the copy and you think, damn, why didn't this get finished? Well, because I didn't finish it. Maybe somebody will come along and edit it and design it. Maybe. Who knows, right? Okay, let me figure out here. The most recognizable feature of Baphomet is, of course, its goat head. And remember, too, when people win a lot of awards, they call them goats. It's something about if you win, like, an Oscar, an Emmy, and something like that, you become a goat. I wonder if that means the same thing. This monstrous head represents man's animal and sinful nature, its egotistic tendencies, and its basest instincts. Opposed to man's spiritual nature, this animal side is regardlessly viewed as a necessary part of man's dualistic nature, where the animal and the spirit must unite in harmony. It can also be argued that Baphomet's grotesque overall appearance might serve well to ward off and repel the profane who are uninitiated So yeah, I didn't know that Baphomet's phallus is actually Hermes' caduceus, a rod intertwined with two serpents. From the base of the spine to the pineal gland, using serpentine power. Pretty interesting, huh? So it goes through all this whole thing about all of the Templars and all this stuff, and lots there to read should you make that choice. I also dug up different Baphomet things. It looks to me like that 1800 year is probably about the time, and that aligns with the time I keep saying they took over. Found some good pictures of them throwing all their signals around. Hitler said, "I have learned most all from the Jesuit order. So far, there has been nothing more imposing on earth than the hierarchical organization of the Catholic Church. A good part of that organization I have transported directly to my own party." Yeah, Hitler was big on the Jesuits. Need to track down some Jesuit priests actually wrote Mein Kampf. Who was it? I don't know. I lost the trail and didn't pick it up again. But a Jesuit wrote Mein Kampf is the main point here, right? So then we get to this room at the Catholic Church starts to make a great deal more sense because they have this large hall. There is this large hall is purported by conspiracy theorists to have been built to look like the head of a snake. A central feature of the hall is the sculpture called the Resurrection, an extremely large bronze depicting Jesus Christ facing the consequences of a nuclear blast. The room was constructed in 1971 and named after Pope Paul VI. In the middle of the stage, there's a statue of the Messiah rising from an atomic apocalypse. It was designed and put in place in 1977. The head of the Messiah looks suspiciously like the head of a snake, with its fangs open, prepared to bite. It is equally as ghoulish as the snake hall, but also has depictions. So, yeah, so I used to wonder, because they say that you'll notice that the head of Christ, which is on the statue, has his hair blowing in the breeze or some such thing. But if you look closer, it is more than that. The head of the Messiah is turning into a reptile. So, yeah, let me see here. So they have this big room, the statue, half of the statue has a face and the other has what looks like a reptile. Now, I didn't understand any of this stuff until I got to the part about what does Vatican mean. I don't think I said this in the last show, but honestly, I can't remember. This is when I got to this point here, and it all made sense. Vatican means divine snake. And I'm not joking at all. The word Vatican comes from Latin and is a contraction of two words in the following way, vatis or can, C-A-N. Also remember, too, C-A-N means serpent or snake, right? Because these two words combined make the prophetic or made divine serpent. The Vatican is a place, so you may say that Vatican means the place of the prophetic and worshiped serpent. And also can, the word can, C-A-N from Latin, means serpent slash snake. Remember, they have canon laws, right? All the laws that we have started with canon laws. So I'm guessing canon laws started from snakes, right? Well, it's a pretty good word because when I look at these people, in my mind, I envision wicked snakes, right? So then I had another question. Does Vatican really mean prophetic snake? No, prophetic serpent. So yes, it does. It really does. And there's a spiritual serpent that is worshipped as God. So obviously these people worship these snakes, right? So, yeah, I don't really know. It was pretty, I'm still a little bit... That one was so obvious and so hiding in plain sight, right? And then I also have information about all these hats they wear, these fish hats. And, you know, those obliques, they're all from Egyptians, right? And I'm not going to go into all of those because I've talked endlessly as far as the City of London, all of that. So the cross is, in fact, pagan in origin. So they say that various other authorities have linked the cross with nature worship and pagan sex rites introduced to make it easier for pagans to accept Christianity. So that's why the cross is found in both pre-Christian and non-Christian cultures. So they said that they introduced the same cross to make it easier for pagans to accept Christianity. Nevertheless, devotion to any pagan temple is clearly condemned in the Bible. The scriptures also forbid all forms of idolatry. So, pagan sexual rites. That has to do with this. I'm very confused. There's this thing called Dagon, the fish god. I don't know. Dagon, the fish god, is why they wear those hats. So what they did was they used to wear these, the people who were pagans, okay, they were called Dagon priests, okay, and they wore this fish hat. And then if you look at the popes today, they also wear a fish hat. So the Catholic popes wear the same style hat as the old pagan priests who worship the fish god Dagon. I also, when I did all the shows about Saturnalia, the Pope also wears the same hat as Santa Claus. Okay. So I have pictures of Nelson Mandela hanging out with his. The Knights of Malta also have these degrees of Freemason. I can't vouch for that, but it was reasonable to me. The Knights Templar, who are now resigned, okay? The Knights Templar, they were called the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and of the Temple of Solomon, okay? So the Knights Templar were there early on, and they were also, I think they claimed that they were guarding the route to blah, 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 and so that's where they came up with the word hospital from, hospitallers. So that's where the Knights Templar are, but they're no longer around. Now we're focused on the other people. So then I started looking at other pictures. Like, I have pictures of King Charles. He is wearing the Malta, and he's also wearing the Iron Cross. I believe they're pretty much one and the same. The Roman Catholic Church uses military-like orders or societies to carry out their aims and protect the church. Using these societies as a secret army to do the church's bidding protects it from scrutiny and bad press. For example, in the Middle Ages, the Knights Templar was an order that fought in the Crusades on behalf of the papacy. Templar knights were given the ability to ignore many laws, taxes, and authorities, but had to obey the Pope. The original historic Knights Templar were a Christian military order, the Order of the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and of the Temple of Solomon, that existed from the 12th to 14th century to provide warriors in the Crusades. At the 1937 World Zionist Congress, this Weissman person said, perhaps only 2 million will survive the upcoming Holocaust, but they will be ready for life in Palestine. So yes, for a long time, I thought that maybe there were two groups of Jews, right? No, this was to wipe out the Jews that were around. Those were the ones that got sent off to the concentration camps. But if you remember, they also had a lot of trouble during that time because the Jews they were trying to capture and murder in concentration camps also have the Roman nose. I kept looking at pictures, and I thought, gee, these people all have the same nose. So yeah, during World War II, when they were rounding up the Jews to put them in concentration camps, they were rounding up some of their own people because of the confusion over the nose. Okay, let me see here. And also, I found a fantastic piece of, I found a wonderful piece, picture. Picture of Barack Obama dressed up as Baphomet, and it had been authenticated, okay? It's a leaked image of Barack Obama dressed as Satan. Doesn't get any better than this. I found that. I was digging around the index. I mean, a few days I've been looking at their picture, right? So, now where did they come from? Well, maybe they came from these Indians. Just like the Nubia, the Indians had a black-skinned god that engaged in drunkenness and killing humans. The rituals were public orgies with wine drinking and human sacrifices. So there's all this stuff, and I don't know what the answer is. Because I know I'm looking around a lot, like, for example, in Appalachia here in this country, I know that a lot of black people that got brought over here as slaves, or maybe they were brought into Haiti and came over, and they got shipped into Cuba, and they got, anyway, I've gone through all this stuff before, but a lot of black people, according to people in Appalachia, a lot of black people ended up in those mountains in Appalachia that nobody has ever accounted for or really knows about. Now, I just know this because I incessantly look at the information. So yeah, I have seen people in Appalachia talk about having black relatives who had escaped from the slave days that nobody's talking about. So I think there's something here with all of those Indians, because they say the Egyptians and Indians would not have enslaved their own people. So yeah, it seems to me more and more like black people were here for it first. Now, can I solve this issue? No, not hardly. So it had to do with this fighting between King James and all this stuff, and the Jesuits planned this thing called the Gunpowder Plot in 1605 to blow up the king. And that was Guy Fawkes, F-A-W-K-E-S. You hear about that over in the UK. Most of the Jesuits who were behind this foul deed were arrested when the plot was discovered and hanged. In 1628, an act was passed in England against sending any to the continent to be popishly bred or educated. The purpose of this act was to flush out those Englishmen who were spies of the Jesuits. So yeah, they evidently, this Guy Fawkes thing, I don't know much about it, but it evidently came from these Jesuits, okay? Because James Wadsworth was one young Englishman who was trained in a Jesuit college in Spain for the work of reconverting England to the papal religion. And keep in mind, the United States was primarily Protestant. That's why they flooded this country with Catholics, right? In his book published in the 17th century, blah, 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 he told how the students in the college would sing the needs to Mary. Mary is the Romanist goddess. I don't know. King James's fight was not with the Catholic Church, but the Jesuits, who are agents of the Moors. The Protestants were really about unaddressed, I don't know. And so anyway, so yes, King James and his sons were all brown-skinned. Semitic people are a different race from black, even though we are all brothers of mankind. Whites and yellows are our brothers. We Negro Semitic, obviously I'm reading something, I'm as white as they come, right? We Negro Semitic people just have a closer relationship with the blacks because our sojourn in Egypt, when they allowed our ancestors sanctuary. So no black people ruled Europe. It was brown-skinned Hebrews like Jesus with brown skin. Queen Charlotte of Mecklenburg, Germany is brown-skinned. Most Germans called Teutons, Franks, and Saxons were brown-skinned. Yeah, I'm going to leave this here for you guys to explore. It appears to me that that would be a pretty good reason, right? If the original people had brown skin, right? Then these Jesuits came in, killed them all off, right? Well, that would kind of explain their hatred for all things with brown skin, right? And it would also explain their wanting to murder
everybody with brown skin, because they, if anybody found out that the founding people were really black, what would it do to all these white people, right? Kind of wipe them off the face of the earth, right? So maybe that's why they want to block up all the black men and stuff, because they're worried that anybody might figure out that the place was really founded by black people. I'm joking, but I'm really not. You know what I mean? I do believe this part of it, okay? But I'm not well enough to do much more about, okay? There's a lot here. So, because they say Catholic bishops are actually high priests of Dagon, the ancient pagan deity of the Philistines. You see, the mitre of the bishop wears is a replica of the costumes worn by the priests of Dagon. That's right. The priests of Dagon wore a headdress that looked like the head of a fish with an open mouth, and down their back, they wore a long cape that looked like the skin of a big fish. When you look at a Catholic bishop sideways, you can see the open mouth fish head, and his cape looks just like that fish skin they wore. This proves that Catholicism is really just old-fashioned devil-worshipping paganism, right? But actually, the bishop's mitre developed from the calicon, a form of crown worn in the imperial court of Byzantine. There are no pictures of a Catholic bishop wearing what we would recognize as a mitre until the 11th century, and then it was a shorter, softer hat, which only developed into its present form in the late, long after the worshippers of Dagon were dead and gone. The true history of the bishop's mitre is found with a simple search on the internet. So, yeah, I think the hat says it all, right? Were the Dagon people the Protestant? I really, and I lost here. I've never studied this stuff, so I really don't know. But obviously, this Dagon thing is a big deal. This bent crucifix is a sinister symbol used by Satanists in the 6th century. So that bent crucifix, or also that I talked about earlier, it came from the 6th century, and it was revived by the Vatican. This was a bent or broken cross. Yeah. Oh, I didn't tell you this before. This was a bent or broken cross on which was displayed a repulsive, distorted figure of Christ, which has black magicians and sorcerers of the Middle Ages have made use of to represent the biblical term mark of the beast. So that crooked cross has to do with this mark of the beast business. So Pope John and Pope used a satanic bent crucifix during their outdoors and even some indoor celebrations. Satanists invented this distorted figure of emaciated Christ on a bent cross as a symbol of Antichrist. Oh, I got it. Okay, so that bent. So, I don't know. It looks to me, I don't know, Pope Francis is the one hauling it around now, right? So, is he the Antichrist? I don't know. Pope John II was also running around with that same Christ cross. So, I don't know. Why did Pope Francis bring it back out again? The name Pope's Cross could also be used to describe other designs. An archbishop would use a crozier, which would also be compared to the Orthodox bishop, which it terminates in a pair of snakes. Well, yeah, because they worship snakes, or snakes is their god, right? The term bent cross is sometimes applied to the swastika cross. Other crosses with bends include the twisted cross and the curved cross. The satanic Bible, the cross for the satanic Bible, is based on the alchemic symbol for sulfur. And isn't that funny? So the satanic Bible has the symbol for sulfur. And what are they bombing us with? Sulfur. All of these, I've talked a million times about them throwing out that thermite and all these sulfur-related things they're using to kill us with. Well, that's probably where they got that from, right? Okay, and also, some of these pictures get doctored, okay? So I'll point this out because I have this picture here, and it says, when this statue was unveiled of George Washington, the first president of the United States, the people could not understand why their esteemed George was depicted in such a strange half-naked pose. Look at the classic image of the satanic symbol of Baphomet, however, and it all becomes clear. So George Washington, sitting there with half his shirt off, his arm raised just like Baphomet, but you'll notice the finger that he's showing. Well, In the original picture, which I couldn't find, George Washington is showing up two fingers, okay? That's a symbol of Baphomet, right? Well, in this picture, it looks like he's flipping the bird because I think somebody photoshopped his photo. So before you go crazy with photos, always consider this, that maybe somebody might have photoshopped it. So anyway, so I have all of the symbols there. I mean, come on, they're all here. They're all these religions. They're using the same symbols all over the place. Even these, all of the crescent moon, the morning star, all religions and all roads lead back to these people who, in fact, cooked it all up. Now, was religion a really thing on the game board earlier? Don't know. Could be. I don't know. But I know that since these people took over, religious took a very dark turn, right? We always see we have that eye on the back of the $1 bill. That is the eye of Horus. It is an ancient Egyptian symbol of royal power. It is also known as the eye of Lucifer, or the all-seeing eye. They're big on these eyes now, aren't they? The all-seeing eye is a universal occult symbol for promoting the coming Antichrist, the man of sin. The eye itself represents Lucifer, the god of this world, who gives illumination to his worshipers. So when you see that all-seeing eye, well, look at Joe Rogan's intro to his show, the Joe Rogan Experience. He has that eye right in the center of his forehead. That is called the all-seeing eye. And I've also found that I found this picture, and it was kind of interesting because the wings got my attention, right? In Dante's Inferno, Satan is portrayed as a giant demon, frozen up to the waist in ice at the center of hell. Satan has three faces and a pair of bat-like wings affixed under each chin. As Satan beats his wings, he creates a cold wind that continues to freeze the ice surrounding him and other sinners in the ninth circle. The winds he creates are felt through the outer circles of hell. Satan, also known as Lucifer, was formerly the angel of light and once tried to usurp the power of God. The first ruler of hell was the angel Lucifer, formerly known as Samael, who was cast out of heaven as punishment for leading a rebellion, a failed rebellion against his father. Lucifer unwittingly ruled over hell for a billion years, even long before there were damned souls, before deciding to abdicate his throne and leave hell for earth. And boy, are we surrounded right now. All the little demons have come back. I'll explain more later why I'm saying all that. Anyway, so I got a lot of stuff here. I got all the stuff you take a look at. That obelisk or the phallic symbol symbolizes the sun god Ra in Egypt. Ra is Ra-El. Yeah, I think that you should be able to. The Egyptians thought of the obelisk as a phallic symbol of power and fertility and used it to honor their sun god. An obelisk, the Greek word for spit, nail, or pointed pillar, is a tall, narrow, four-sided monument with a pyramidion on top. In the past, obelisk used to be made of a simple piece of stone and was originally carved in ancient Egypt more than 3,000 years ago. In Egyptian mythology, it symbolizes the sun god Ra. And during the religious reformation of Akhenaten, it was said to have been petrified, to have been a petrified ray of the Aten, the sun disk. I can't. Anyway, that's what they. So they also put things on top of it. You can see over there. That'd be it. Try to fumble through it. The Trinity of Global Control, Vatican, City of London, Washington D.C., all hidden. City of London, 1 square mile, secret country subject from the UK and is world financial playground. Vatican City, spiritual capital of the world, at the center of Rome, Italy, and House of Pope. Washington, D.C., the flag of the District of Columbia, which is a 10-mile secret state subject from the U.S. Constitution in Washington, D.C. Funny how they have to keep all these things little secrets, right? I've got all their symbols about like secret business. Anyway, so I'm getting kind of worn out, so I'm going to leave the rest of this to you guys go through. I'm going to scan real quick. Yeah, we got all this from them. We got Sunday is Sun's Day. Monday is Moon's Day. Tuesday is Thursday. Wednesday is Odin's Day. Thursday is Thor's Day. Friday is Frigga Day. Saturday is Saturn's Day. Odin is the person. Odin is Santa Claus. So Odin first appeared in... Santa Claus got cooked up in the United States in the 1800s, but they say that Santa Claus is really Nimrod. So I have all the documentation there. Did you realize that Christmas was illegal in the United States until 1836 because it was considered an ancient pagan holiday? Gee, and I have all the lists of all the so-called deities over here. Did you know that Easter is an ancient pagan festival of worship to the Virgin Mother Goddess Ishtar, who is said to have come to Earth in a moon egg or Ishtar's egg? Easter eggs, Easter bunnies, Lent are all from Babylon, the true origin of Christianity. I just kind of, in my head, I started to go through these. According to ancient Babylonian legend, it is claimed that Ishtar caused the fish goddess Atigaras to cause a great egg to fall in the Euphrates River, where fish pushed it to the shore, and Sumerians were miraculously born. The Easter egg, Ishtar egg, does not represent the stone rolled away from the tomb like the medieval church said it did. Anyway, so the English word Easter, so this is all about when Easter eggs, that's why it's Easter, right? Ishtar, I-S-H-T-A-R, sounds like Easter, right? The Easter egg hunt is based on the notion that if anyone found Easter's egg while she was being reborn, she would bestow a blessing upon that lucky person. Because this is a joyous spring festival, eggs were colored in bright spring pastel colors. The Easter bunny among the Celts custom dictated that the goddess totem would lay eggs for the good children to eat. Yeah, so I went through the different holidays, and yes, all of the holidays are pagan. Pagan Easter was about happy, cheerful, fun, colorful, life, birth, joyful, laughing, renewal. Christian Easter was about suffering, painful, sorrowful, torture, dark, crying, death, funeral, burial. Easter was originally the celebration of Ishtar, the Asian and Babylonian goddess of fertility and sex. Her symbols, like the egg and the bunny, were and still are fertility and sex symbols. Then I also looked up St. Valentine's Day, also egg. It's a satanic holiday. Pagan holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving isn't about eat turkey with Indians. Thanksgiving, another highly celebrated holiday that is rooted in wickedness and the destruction of the Lord's chosen people. So yeah, Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's Day, Valentine's Day, Easter, Halloween, and Mother's Day and Father's Day, also pagan holidays. Then I found this really funny graphic. It said it showed all these pagans, torches, and said pagans. They're pretty pissed. Maybe they want their holidays back. So I will leave that for you to read because there is a lot there. And also, I included more information about the pineal gland again because I have talked about that. The pineal gland you get, you unleash the power of the pineal gland. Sun and sleep, the two S's, sun and sleep. You need to be getting both of those. And I've got some terrific pictures of the pineal gland. They call it, at the Vatican, they actually have a place called the pine cone symbol. The pine cone symbol of enlightenment, fertility, third eye, eternal life. Pine cones were considered symbols of fertility by Romans, Greeks, and Christians. Pine cones have also been associated with the third eye, enlightenment, and the pineal gland. So you see these pineal glands, and I've shown you some pictures here because until you really get to look for them, because like one of them, the pine cone, if you look at it from the top, it's actually the flower of life. So all of these religions all go back to just one, right? And interestingly enough, when I was looking at this pine cone thing, it's called the Pine Cone Courtyard, the Vatican. The Pine Cone Courtyard is the first main courtyard you pass through on your way to the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican Museums. The courtyard is named after the huge bronze statue shaped like a pine cone. The metal sculpture was originally part of a fountain dating back to 2 century AD and was crafted during the ancient Roman times. So I was wondering, there's two birds next to the sink, so I was wondering, what are those birds? Well, those birds turned out to be peacocks. The two peacocks either side were taken from the emperor's villa in Tivoli. So some emperor Tivoli had these peacocks. When a peacock displays its tail, it looks like hundreds of eyes are watching us. Because of this, the peacock has been associated with the all-seeing eye of God, who sees all actions of all people, meaning that nothing escapes the universal justice. The peacock also came to symbolize the all-seeing Catholic Church, who watches over her children continually day and night. According to the Catholic Church, the peacock represents immortality and resurrection. Never knew any of this. This is why, get off social media and just go looking for yourself. All of these people that I have scanned around and looked at, they've all been yep, having about this one-eye business, right? I have not seen one single person mention that Vatican means snake. I have not seen one person mention the peacock. Now, maybe I just have missed it, but I do not think so. So I'll keep reading here. The reason for the peacock, peacocks do not decay, and when they die, excuse me, the reason for all of this is because peacocks do not decay, and when they die, they do not decay when they die, and when they shed their feathers, they are replaced by colors more brilliant than the last. It comes to no surprise that the peacock feathers are used to decorate churches around Easter as they mirror the theme of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. They're also found in art and other forms depicting death and rebirth. In Muslim myth, the symbolic meaning of the peacock is said to guard the gates of paradise. And given the similarities between Islamic beliefs and Christianity, it is interesting to note the two birds standing guard beside the third eye chakra pine cones and gateway to God in the Vatican are peacocks. In ancient Greek, the peacock is associated with Argos, a monster with 100 eyes that can see everything, the all-seeing eye. It is no coincidence that in medieval Europe, Italy, and UK, the feather of the peacock became associated with bad luck and called the evil eye. In Asia, peacock feathers are a symbol of good luck. The peacock was also associated with the all-seeing eye of the Egyptian sun gods Amon-Ra and later Horus. In Egyptian myth, the sun gods are killed and restored to life. Thus, again, we see the peacock associated with regeneration. In Hindu myth, the peacock is associated with goddess Saraswati, which is Sanskrit meaning the essence of the self. She is the consort of the creator god Brahma. So, they cut and paste this all over the place now, don't they? The symbolic meaning of the peacock then refers to the transformation of the physical body, which is possible by changing the way you think.
Okay, so the two peacocks are stood either side of the pine cone pineal gland represents the duality of consciousness and how positive negative thoughts result in the creation of good or bad, wanted or unwanted. Because of its beauty, the peacock is associated with pride, one of the seven deadly sins. However, like the symbolic meaning of the peacock, pride is a double-edged sword, as you should take pride in what you do without craving for recognition and attention. Peacocks eat poisonous snakes and are thus referred to as serpent slayers. The serpent, of course, represents the subconscious mind and sinful pride. Therefore, the peacock has a strong symbolic edge that shows when you defeat your demons, you expand conscious awareness and transform energy in a different way. Okay, the peacock plays a role in Greek mythology as a symbol of the goddess Hera, the consort of Zeus. Originally from India, where they were symbolic of royalty, they were later brought to ancient Babylon by Indian traders many centuries ago. Like many things, the peacock in its symbolism came to ancient Greece from Babylon, and they took on a Greek provenance when they became a symbol of the goddess Hera, whose chariot they pulled. According to the Catholic Church, the peacock represents immortality and resurrection. The reason for this is because peacocks do not decay. Yeah. So it becomes as no surprise that peacock feathers. So yeah, death and rebirth. Never knew that. In Islamic myth, the peacock is said to allow Iblis or Satan to enter the Garden of Eden where he tempts Eve. The peacock is expelled from paradise with them. So, yeah, the all-seeing eye, that peacock, right? I have a peacock on my wall in my living room. No kidding. When I used to go to auctions and stuff, I found this huge peacock from the 60s. And well, I was going to sell it on eBay, never got it sold, so I hung it on my wall. Well, I'm going to take it down now, but anyway, so yeah, I took down any statues that I have around here that I notice are not good. I just take them down, right? The peacock means the essence of the self. Oh, interesting stuff about the peacock, right? Peacock. Yeah, I had that thing about decay a million times. Yeah, the eye of Horus is also that one eye. The eye of Horus or Ra, the light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. So I have a lot of stuff about this symbolism as far as all religions were invented by these people, okay? So I hate to break it to you, but yeah. That crescent moon and stuff, they're all symbolism of Satan. As a matter of fact, the Red Cross, when they're in certain countries, they use the crescent moon as their logo in certain countries. They don't use that Red Cross everywhere. So I also have, did you know, and I knew this, but I kind of forgot about it. The rotunda of the Capitol building shows George Washington becoming a god. The inside of the rotunda of the Capitol building contains a painting fresco called the Apotheosis of Washington. Painted in 1865 by Constantino Brumidi, this artist previously worked at the Vatican. Some theorists believe it shows George Washington draped in regal purple robes becoming a god. This theory is true. Apotheosis actually means ascending to a godlike status. The allegorical piece also features 13 maidens, which represent the original 13 colonies. The group is flanked by Roman gods and goddesses, including Neptune, Mercury, and Minerva. This is all about status. It's all about climbing ladders. It's all about that kind of stuff, right? And the Pentagon is a satanic symbol of infinity. The U.S. Pentagon takes its name from its unique shape, a five-sided pentagon or pentagram. However, some people believe its infinite design, is a sign of the occult. So you'll have to look for yourself. I think it looks like the occult. The goddess Isis. Isis. How often do we hear the word Isis? Isis. Well, the goddess Isis sits above the Capitol building. The Statue of Freedom, Isis, sits on top of the Capitol building. The bronze figure wears a military helmet and holds a sword, laurel wreath, and shield. The statue is an allegory for the United States and is similar to Columbia, another personification of the ideals held by the country. Some conspiracy theorists believe that the statue is actually the Egyptian god Isis. However, Isis traditionally holds an ankh, ankh, in one hand and wears a throne-shaped headdress. So they're saying that this ISIS doesn't have two things, so that can't be it. Well, I think it's ISIS, okay? But you have to think for yourself, because I'm not dictating to you. I'm telling you, I think it looks like ISIS. And there's also a Masonic temple near the White House. The building called the House of Temple is the home of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. And also, we got that, I don't remember, the Civil War flag came from Scottish Rites. Several important buildings in Washington resemble Greek designs. Homage to Greek designs can be found everywhere in Washington, D.C. The Supreme Court building, the White House, the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial, and even the Capitol building featured pillared entries, decorative frescoes, and white stone constructed like the ancient buildings found in Greece. Are these buildings a symbol of some strange connection between the founding fathers and various pagan gods? Or were they simply subject to the neoclassical trends that were popular at the time of their construction? Well, they were popular at the time of their construction because they were real, right? And also, they say that these streets in Washington, D.C. form a pentagram with the White House at its apex. Not all Muslims are terrorists, but why are all terrorists Muslims? As they got the basic instinct of killing the infidels after following the 164 jihad verses in the Quran. Okay, what does ISIS actually stand for? It's an abbreviation for Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, ISIS. But there's some confusion. Yeah, well, I got to tell you what the confusion is. I'm not confused. It's the same, right? That you don't rename things the exact same thing if you're confused, right? You rename things using the exact same thing if you want to show clarity, right? Like, if somebody is your enemy, then you wouldn't go around calling yourself ISIS, right? So you do it in homage to that thing, right? That's why the Star of David, what distinguishes a seal of Solomon from the Star of David is the two triangles are interlaced, giving the appearance of a three-dimensional figure. This was said in the Testament of Solomon to make demons confused and dizzy, unable to do Solomon any harm. And that's the same seal of Solomon they use on the Star of David. Just a mistake? Just a coincidence? No, of course not. So I have all these things, all the alchemic things, what hexagrams are. The Pope is wearing an actual Star of David on his hat. How much more simple do you need to get, right? Okay, I'm going to be scrolling along here. To summarize, the six-pointed star is the supreme symbol of satanic tyranny, which has been used by people throughout history to directly or indirectly worship Satan. The adulterous Babylonians, Egyptians, and Assyrians used it. The Israelites worshiped star gods such as Rimfab and Cheum, which could have been five-sided or six-sided stars. Solomon used the talisman of Saturn, which has a hexagram, in worship of false gods and to invoke the powers of Satan. In Antichrist, Beast of Revelation, the Roman Catholic Church uses it. The Jesuit-controlled ultra-wealthy Rothschild family used it to steal the world's wealth. Satanists, Luciferians, astrologers, and witches use it to invoke the power of demons. The six-sided star numerically equals 666, 6 points, six triangles, six hexagrams. It's on Israel's flag because the Antichrist Jesuits control the state of Israel. So, I think that's about it, right? I think that pretty much says. And I was also looking into why are there so many versions of the Bible? I've talked about this in the past, but I'll tell you again. They have all of these versions and all of that satanic, that sulfur stuff. Sulfur. Why is the symbol for sulfur part of the satanic logo, right? How many Bibles? The Roman Catholic Church has 73 Bibles divided this way. Excuse me. Old Testament, 46 books. New Testament, 27 books. The Protestant canon based on the Protestant, excuse me, the Protestant canon based on the Palestinian canon has 66 books divided this way. Old Testament 29, 39, New Testament 27. So, in an effort to help people better understand what was originally meant, newer translations are developed that use modern language. So I think they've just been changing the text around, right? And there's 66 books of the Bible. If that doesn't say enough, Old Testament 39, New Testament 27 equals 66. And then also on these, I have a picture of Jesus showing the same sign that Baphomet is showing. The symbols are right there for everybody to see. Well, I am pretty well exhausted here. You'll notice my cat finally settled down. She's sleeping here next to me. She is something else, very, very sick. So, anyways, I'll be getting back to more about that later. But I think I've said it all. I think I've said it all. They are, in fact, the Jesuits. The Jesuits. The Jesuits made up all this stuff. They wrote all these books. Did any of these things before that happened? I don't know. I would be careless and irresponsible to say that anything before the Jesuits was really real, right? Because there is no proof that anything is real. They've been rolling out old technology. We do not have pictures of things, right? We only have their drawings of things. So at what point do we say that this part is reality and that part isn't reality, right? I say the path of the simple is this. Figure out who was around robbing Africa. That same core group of people are the same people. Their relatives are, in fact, in charge today because this whole thing with the Catholic Church is all about Orisi, Isis, and Horus. Isis, Horus, and Set is what the IHS for the Catholic Church means. Isis, Horus, and Set. I don't think ISIS is just some sort of random mistake here, okay? And I've got all the pictures here. Take a look for yourself. They say that Orisis is the father, Isis is the mother, and Horus is the child. So take a look for yourself. And also, they bring in that black cube. Everybody's talking about that black cube over in all these parts of the world over there. Black cube. They have people worshiping the black cube. The black cube is also satanic. It all is. It all, every bit of it is. It, all roads lead back. And I am going to, they say that who these families are today. I have a list of them here. Now, what's interesting about this, okay? They say House of Bernadette, Sweden, House of Bourbon, France, House of, I'm not going to read these. Okay, there's a bunch of them, okay? But here's the interesting part. All the families you will find on the Windsor family tree. So does this explain why the Windsors are the in-our-face kind of royals, like, right? Like, we know everything about the Windsors, like when they have their babies, when they do this, when they do that. But we don't know a lot about these other people. It doesn't really hit our main news cycles when, let's say, somebody in Belgium has a baby or something, right? Not like it does when the Windsors. So what is interesting in this? This is what it is saying. Now, somebody needs to do the genealogy to verify this, right? It says this: all the families listed are connected with the House of Julep, Juelph, one of the original black nobility families of Venice, from which the House of Windsor and thus the present Queen of England descends. The Guleps are so intertwined with the German some words really aristocrats through the House of Hanover that it would take several pages to mention all their connection. So the Guleps, Guelphs, intertwined with German aristocracy. Almost all European royal houses originate from the House of Hanover and thus from the House of Julep, the black nobility. As an example, the Hanoverian British King George I came from the Duchy of Lunenburg, a part of northern Germany, which had been governed by the Gulep family since the 12th century. Today, the Guleps, or the Windsors, rule by dominating the raw materials market, and for years they have fixed the price of gold, a commodity they neither produce nor own. The House of Windsor also controls the price of copper, zinc, lead, and tin. It is no accident that the principal commodity exchanges are located in London, England. Companies run by the black nobility families are British Petroleum, Oppenheimer, Philbro, and many more. Another black nobility family are the Grosvenors in England. For centuries, this family lived, as most of the European did, on ground rent. They believe in this thing called ground rent. What that means is they buy a place and they rent it out forever. What do you think they're doing here in the United States? They're buying up every home they can get their greedy little paws on, because in their background, they believe in this ground rent business, okay? Today, the same family owns at least 300 acres of land in the center of London. The land is never sold, but leased on a 39-year leasehold agreement, the ground rent of the Middle Ages. Grosvenor Square, in which the American Embassy is located, belongs to the Grosvenor family, as does Eaton Square. In Eaton Square, apartments are rented out for blah, blah, blah. This is to give you an idea of the immense wealth of the black nobility. This is the main reason why these noble families are behind most, if not all, of the wrong-headed pro-environmental movements of the world that ultimately and covertly aim to curb population growth. Prince Philip and Prince Charles are the most visible symbols of these movements, and both have often spoken with the utmost callousness about the need to rid the world of unwanted people. The black nobility are the founders of the secret society of our day, from which all the others are connected. And they originate through the Committee of 300, all of that. So if you're looking for a starting point, can get them all that way, right? And I've already talked about how the, as a matter of fact, I've got some very interesting pictures here. The Nazis were showing Catholic symbolism. So, yeah, under various disguises, the Jesuits worked their way into offices of state, climbing up the councils of kings and shaping the policy of nations. They became servants to act as spies upon their masters. They established colleges for the sons and princes of nobles and schools for the common people, and the children of Protestant parents were drawn into an observance of popish rites. The outwardly pomp and display of the Roman worship was brought to bear to confuse the mind and dazzle and captivate the imagination, and thus the liberty for which the fathers had toiled and bled was betrayed by the sons. The Jesuits rapidly spread themselves over Europe, and wherever they went, there followed a revival of popery. There is a definite cause for concern when understanding the aims of this order. The depths of deception practice would know no bounds, and the concealment of their purposes under the disguise of benevolence so definitively reflects the serpent's work in the Garden of Eden in causing men to revolt against God through subtlety. It is very well known that their arms, upon being established, were the indefinite infiltration of churches, nations, governments. Francis, the father general of the order from which the, Francis Borgia, the father general of the order from which the Jesuit Pope Francis received his name. So Pope Francis got his name from those Borgia people. I never knew that, right? So Borgia let Francis use their name. And they said, "We came in like lambs and will rule like wolves. We shall be expelled like dogs and return like eagles. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves." So yeah, that sums up these Jesuits, right? And I also have how they tie together Stalin. All this stuff comes into the thing. German brought the Bible into the hands of the German princes who ruled over Germany. So, yeah, I don't know. Something happened along there. Did they really all come from Germany and then went over to Italy? Could be. Some things you don't really want to get too weighed down with, right? Because now we know specifically who they are, right? Today, the Jesuits are stronger in the United States than they ever were in any of the countries of Europe, which expelled them as a menace to the government in 1912. It was not long until the Catholic Church again received political power again in 1929, which gave the Vatican back into the hands of the papacy, allowing it to have diplomatic ties with the nations of the world. So, yeah, 1929, they. Everybody started going along with the Catholics, right? There's just a lot here. And then I have information here you might want to see. It's called the Hidden Hand. The Hidden Hand lets the other initiatives know that the individual depicted is part of this secret brotherhood and that his actions were inspired by the Masonic philosophy and beliefs. So the Hidden Hand, the Jesuits are a military religious order, yeah, and they put that hand in their coat pocket. I've got pictures of them all doing it. Washington, Bonaparte, Marx, Stalin, Obama, they all have their hands in that thing. And I have a list of all the Jesuit people. If one were to want to do a genealogy on the people, I think I've got everything here to give it a pretty good start. But I want to be very clear. I am not well enough to lunge forward and start doing genealogy charts. I am sharing my work in the hopes that somebody will come along and take it one step further because, for a fact, besides them being celebrities, we can obviously see the ones at the top, right? Like we can see the ones running things. We can see them when they get their black eyes and stuff. But to be responsible, we would want to take it one step further. And I said, we would want to take it one step. I mean, somebody would want to take it one step further. And that would be to start running genealogies on these people. Because I bet you, if you start to run a genealogy on, oh, let's say, any of them, Obama. Well, Obama would be hard because of all the lies and because when they start rewriting their histories, they redo things. So it could be hard. So you want to pick somebody that you can figure out the truth from. So I'd probably pick somebody like Prince Philip because he's been around. You know, they have pretty well established genealogy there. Who are the heirs from Prince Philip, right? Because it seems like all of the heirs are going to come out of the Windsors. So, like I said before, it's only 350 of them. So now we know that the main royal lines are coming out of that Jussep, and they also will be followed through the Windsor line. So, I need to close this show for right now. I am pretty exhausted. I think I've said everything I want to say. If I didn't, I will certainly say it the next time I come around. And I keep doing and talking about doing my 3-year check-in, and I will, in fact, do it next. So, put out that there. What I'm trying to do is I am sitting on some pretty slippery ice, okay? And I don't think I'm going to drop over dead tomorrow, but I'm pretty sure that I'm 100% that I have a pretty severe case of lung cancer. And I'll be talking about that more. And I'm not sad about it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like upset about it. It's not fun being in this much pain. But that is how the Jesuits operate, right? I just happen to be lucky because I ended up in a home in Nebraska, tucked away, not to be grabbed, right? Because now today they're saying that the whistleblower from Boeing or something, supposedly committed suicide. And people were saying, hey, they killed him. Well, yeah, they probably do kill a lot of whistleblowers. They're trying to kill me, but I consider myself lucky. So don't think I'm going to be telling you about all this stuff when I do that show and I'm going to be all sad. Oh, they're killing me. They're killing me. No, I was quite upset when I recorded that show, when I discovered they were murdering me in my own home, because what had happened was it took me quite a while to gather the evidence, right? And it was almost like the thing flew beyond my control, right? Because the day that I finally put all the pieces together that they were, in fact, radiating my home through my smart meter, they were, in fact, they came back out to my home and they installed transformers all around my house. And I'm being so electrified right now that it was kind of like the day that I put all these pieces together, my hand went for the microphone and it just went from there. So if you listen to this show where I talk about I'm being murdered by the smart meters, well, it's a pretty rough show. I haven't listened to it since I recorded the show, but I do remember swearing a lot. But yes, they do murder a lot of us. And how they are able to do it is because not much solidarity. We're kind of out here on our own, right? We're usually probably black sheep within our own family. So we're kind of out here on our own. And I just have to be lucky because I live in the house that they can't boot me out of, right? So because my family owns the house that I live in, they can't just kick me out. Because I'm too crippled to go out and drive around. Well, I could obviously ride around in somebody else's car if I wanted to. But then I have removed myself from their grasp. I just decided that going out and about may not be in my best interest if I want to keep sharing my work. So I've just been pretty much nestled into my home here in the middle of Nebraska. And when I do that show, I will take you on another tour of my home, because at the time, a lot of people were thinking, what? She online on the internet, she showed us where her house was and took us on a tour. Yep, sure did it. Why did I show you my home on the internet? Wasn't I afraid people come get me? Well, no, because the people that want to murder me already have me in the crosshairs, right? So I decided that what would be the most, well, if they were thinking about killing me, right, which they obviously are, they're doing it, right? Do you think they ever imagined in a million years that I would grab the microphone and tell you exactly where I live and show you exactly where those transformers were and showed you exactly how they hooked up my smart meter to electrify me? Do you really think they thought that I would do that? Of course not. People are so afraid of things that no one in their right mind would probably go online and then tell the whole world where they live, right? So that's why I did it. You know, not because, you know, could some random person come find me? Well, yeah, of course, there's always that possibility. But I believe that most of us are pretty good people. And I believe the people that want to murder me, that they're murdering me over my work. So do you think they'd find me if I went somewhere? Well, yeah, of course they would. They don't have to pay money to hang around outside of my home here in Nebraska because I'm in a small town across from a school. Where are they going to hang out? They're going to hang out around the school and people start wondering, what's that car doing over there? No, so I haven't left my house in almost, well, it's been probably about 2 years now because I didn't want to end up dead. And I never even thought about any of this stuff until I went to, well, I never thought that anybody would try to kill me, but those words did come out of my mouth at one point. When I returned and I was starting to put together pieces of how this was all happening, I recorded a show in, I can't remember, early January, and I was talking about where I was going to be going next. And unplanned by me, and right out of the blue in that show, I talked about somebody shooting me in the head. And I made the comment, but always remember, you can't shoot yourself twice. So obviously, around January timeframe of 2020, I was already getting the idea that somebody was going to be killing me, right? So then after that, I just got too sick and I sold my car and I thought, hey, going outside, if I want to continue sharing my work, going outside and riding around is probably a bad idea. Because, yeah, they probably did kill that whistleblower from Boeing. He just ended up dead yesterday or so when he was out there talking about all the crimes they're committing. These airlines are very dangerous. You should look up aerotoxicity. They tell us that airlines, oh, the airlines is cleaner than the air outdoors. Well, sort of not. What they're doing is they're spewing this stuff into the airline. So if you really seriously have to fly, I'd be careful what airlines you choose. And it is a thing. I mean, it's bumping off the pilots, okay? The pilots all know about this aerotoxicity. And it does something in the engine. I'm just tired today, so I can't remember exactly, but it spews stuff from the engine into the plane. So while you're breathing in this toxicity stuff. They're always wanting us to be breathing in this stuff. That's why they are now saying that 50% of the US population is either getting cancer or is going to come down with cancer. Well, gee whiz, I wonder how that's happening. Couldn't be all the radiation in all of our homes now, could it be? I mean, come on, people. You breathe in radiation, you're gonna get lung cancer. Yeah, I now have massive case of lung cancer. So I'll be back to talk about that more later. But yeah, if you see the show and you think, oh my God, this is going to be a dreadful show. She's going to be screaming and crying like that other show. No, I'm not screaming and crying about anything. I really don't give a shit at this point, okay? I'm so sick, I can barely make it. But you know what? Why do I care, right? This is just some game board, right? Sure, they nailed me pretty hard. Sure, I'm pretty fucking sick. But you know what? Pretty soon I'll get to be out of here. And I'm getting so much help that I encourage you, please get some sleep and get some sun and listen to what your own voice has to say. We allow them to get in charge in all kinds of crazy ways. We don't understand a lot of things. We need to understand how these things work. And yes, that's why they're always talking about this country as being an experiment. It is an experiment. Why do you think our homes are built using balloon construction? Look around. They build our homes with wood. What is with wood? Well, it's pretty flammable, if you ask me. And all this business about sulfur, I think I'm correct. They are going to firebomb us here in this country. So, yeah, so when I do that show, don't be worried that I'm going to be screaming and yelling about things because actually I'm not. Are there times around here that I kind of scream and yell? A little tiny bit, but I try not to because remember, I'm in charge. I got my two lovely cats are also suffering because of this. We lost Marcos and Linda. So I'm just trying to hold ship upright at this point. So if anybody's thinking about doing any genealogy, by all means, go do it. I think we'll all be surprised by what you find. I think you'll notice all the people will still be around and still be in charge. This is a master plot of deception. And for some reason, they just decided to, I guess we were all on some game board in Europe and stuff, right? And they decided to come over, build this country up. Likely that's where the black people came from, right? They were probably here first. So, yeah, it's all been a pretty big deception. So, if I were to guess right now, were there black people here first before the Indians? I would say yes. Of course, I would think that because look at black features and look at Indian features. And you can't tell me that you can kind of see how they kind of look alike, right? And I said in another show before that Indian people have straight hair. I told you a story. I don't know enough about DNA, but I have somewhat wavy hair. My father had somewhat wavy hair. Did everybody in my family get somewhat wavy hair? No. Other people have hair as straight as can be. My mother's hair is straight. My mother was a pretty funny woman. She used to say, look, I got stuck with hair like a cat. It's all straight and flies all around. So, yeah, so I ended up the only one who got the curly hair. So the same thing could happen because people would say, well, you're wrong. Indians have straight hair. African Americans have curly hair. Well, I don't know. Why do I have wavy hair like my dad's? Well, because some Indians could mate with African American Africans and they could come off with Indians who are a combination of maybe people from India and black people combined. Might be the two people who combine to make the American Indian, right? Like the Indians from India could have met with black people. They mated And I could really see that people from India meeting with a black person could produce somebody who would look like an American Indian, right? So just because somebody on the internet says something, well, take it for what it's worth, because all these people on the internet keep talking about this all-seeing eye business, right? Not one of them has pointed out Joe Rogan has it right there on his show, right? Not one of them pointed out that the Vatican really means snakes, right? So I think that the treachery and the trickery is because of these Jesuits. They know how to stab somebody in the back. And most of us were not ready for that because we come in peace, right? Anyway, I got to close off this show for, I am 100% confident, 100% confident that this is how it all worked. And then they just wrote the story around it, right? And when you start thinking complicated, reel it back and think simple, because I think this was a cut and paste operation. So be safe out there. Goodbye for now.